this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Welcome to Hour 2. And if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with Nick Hall. And I'm telling you what, you're going to want to go back and hear it. He's a worldwide evangelist, and he's talking about pressing the reset button. Whether you're a believer or not, we all kind of lose our way, and we need to press the reset button. You know what the button is? It's Jesus. He's the answer to every question, every problem. If you need a spiritual jump start, you got to go back and catch our first hour today with Nick Hall. That podcast will be up in just a little bit at myfaithradio.com. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about navigating the step family relationships, because there are really things that are skills you can gain that can help you navigate those waters. And you can also make mistakes that you actually don't have to make. And Ron Deal, to me, is probably the top expert in this conversation. We've had him on this show and on the Everyday Relationships back when I co-hosted with Dr. Greg. Again, please forgive my voice. I'm on the tail end of a cold. But let me tell you about my second hour guest, and we'll get him on the show. Ron Deal is president of Smart Step Families and director of Family Life Blended for Family Life. He's a family ministry consultant and conducts marriage and family seminars around the country. He and his wife, Nan, have been married since 1986 and have three boys. You can find his influencer page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Ron, pardon my voice, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It is always good to be with you, Susie, and I'm sorry you're under the weather.
Thank you so much. Still looking forward to the conversation. Well, we love to start out our conversations talking scripture, and you chose Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Talk about that verse, that passage.
Well, there's so many things in life that we don't get to control.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, anybody listening who's ever had something happen to them that they didn't want, didn't hope for, or wish for, has realized how really small we are in this universe. And Susie, you know, I think one of the great deceptions in our culture and Western society and our way of thinking is that we can control it. We really think we make life go the direction we set out to make it go. And certainly we influence it. But in the grand scheme of life, you know, there's just so many things we don't control. And those are the moments where you're reminded that you have to trust in the one who knows. Because we make our plans and we set our path, and then life happens. And we have to trust in the one who holds the future, who understands what's going on even when we don't, who has knowledge when we just don't have much of anything. And I think that Proverbs passage is such a great reminder of that. I think you and I have talked before. The passage also has a deep personal meaning for me. My middle son, Connor, passed away when he was 12 years old. It's been over 6 years now. We miss him every single day. And that Proverbs 3 passage was his favorite verse.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were, as we are now, continuing to walk out day after day, the pain of losing him, and how life is so, he would be graduating high school in about 2 months.
Oh, my.
You know? And so this is the year where we're now reflecting on what isn't from the high school graduation point of view. And so there's just constant reminders. We're constantly walking out this loss. And so I have to trust in the Lord with all my heart and lean not on my own understanding about that whole incident in my life. And all the things that have rippled into my life because of that loss, I have to constantly go back to him and trust in God and trust that that it's okay that I don't understand this.
You know, Ron, I'm thinking about even how you opened the show with the control issue. I think if we realized how much we're not in control of, it would actually, I think, make us more grateful and worry less. Because if we think we're in control, deep in the back recesses of our mind, we can't control everything, which I think creates even more worry. But if we start to understand that ultimately God is in control, there's something that settles in the heart. And it doesn't mean, again, we don't go through hard things. I mean, when we interviewed you, and I interviewed you on your son, I think you and I and your wife cried through that whole show. It was just so gut-wrenching to process that. And the loss just continues to have, you know, different seasons, doesn't it, when you're looking at the spring, at the potential of him, you know, he would have been graduating. But even so, as you say, man makes his plans, but the Lord determines his steps. I want you to talk about how you never probably planned to be the expert on step families. And so talk about how this came about for you. And give us a little backstory on your journey.
Yeah, let me do that. But first, let me just bridge here, because as I think about blended families, I think this is a very familiar story for people in blended families. They wake up and find themselves in a situation that they didn't necessarily ask for. That life has thrown them a curve. Mm-hmm. If you're a kid and you're 10 years old and your dad died when you were 5, that was a big curve in the road, boy. And let me tell you, I mean, you didn't ask for that one, right? And then at the age 8, mom got married to a guy who's a wonderful man and is a, you know, great provider and does a lot of things well, but yet he's not your dad. And so you, even then, as a 10-year-old who loves this guy, you have this other part of you that says, yeah, but I really wish my dad were here, right? And so there's curve after curve after curve in the story of people who live in blended families. You never wanted to get a divorce, but your spouse left you and left you with very little financially, and on and on and on it goes. And boy, is that a curve in the road. And then life moves on, and then you find yourself in a new relationship, new family, and now you're trying to figure out how to be a step-parent. And that's another curve in the road. You see, this trusting God thing is not, it's about everything in life that we face. It's not just about the stuff we don't get to control, but it's about everything.
Everything. So good. And the truth of the matter is, as you said, I mean, some listening are in a step situation because they themselves walked away and thought, what have I done here? But others had a spouse walk away, and yet the stigma seems to be the same no matter what. That's what I've encountered with different girlfriends, who, one particular I'm thinking of, whose husband, they were high-profile people. He had an affair, ran away with a woman, you know, 20 years younger, left her devastated with their children, and yet she has the stigma now. I want you just to talk about that, because that even in itself, she can't seem to control, but there she is with it through no choices of her own.
You are very right about that. I think that is an extremely unfortunate hazard of divorce, is that we in the church sometimes don't know how to think about it and understand it, and so we find ourselves, you know, judging people. And I really want to caution everyone listening to be very careful about jumping to conclusions. You know, life is messy and it's complicated, and rarely is there a black and white instance where you can just clearly make determinations like that. We need to be people of compassion and mercy and grace rather than jumping to conclusions and judgment. And by the way, that judgment has great consequence for those people who are on the receiving end of that. They are often marginalized from the church. Just stop right there, because that, how painful is that, that we shoot our wounded? You know?
Exactly. If they ever needed a community to prop them up and hold them up and walk with them, it's now, right?
Exactly. And let me tell you, kids always get lost in that mix, right? Because if the adult is then marginalized from church, then they're not bringing their children, and their kids are not being connected to people and resources that can support them through the difficult transitions that they face. So, you know, we just need to not throw that stone.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's so many stones, Ron, that we don't need to throw, because even for the person who left their family and are dealing with that now, I mean, really, still mercy triumphs over judgment, you know? I mean, if they're trying to put the pieces back together, what they need is more of Jesus, not more of you in your assessments. And so, that, boy, we need to be a place where healing can happen, you know?
You asked earlier how I got into this. No, I didn't see my way into step family ministry. I was a family minister. I worked with a number of churches around the country, and was just trying to pour into couples and parents and helping families that had teenagers, and also wanted to be able to be a blessing to single parent families. And so we had a single parent family ministry, and step families. Well, as a counselor, I was working with a lot of step families, and so I realized some of their struggles and thought, what can we do to prevent problems and build and strengthen step families? And so that just led me down a road of trying to figure out how to do that. That was now over about 20 years ago. And what I didn't realize is that there really wasn't anybody in the church trying to put a lot of concerted effort into that and build models that churches could replicate. And so I just kind of fumbled my way into this. And honestly, I just know it's of God, because there's no way I could have figured it out, because I certainly didn't seek it. And yet it's a wonderful ministry, and I really enjoy it, and it's very rewarding to see lives changed and people who, you know, here's a thought for you. Whatever marriage you're in, make it your last.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Make this one last so it is your last. And what we're seeing is less re-divorce, right? Because people who find themselves in a blended family complexity that they don't know how to manage, then get overrun by it and fall prey to it again. And they didn't want one divorce. They certainly didn't want two. And so we're helping to prevent that. It's just such a joy to see that happening and to see churches replicating ministries around the country. We now have a one-minute radio feature, airs on Faith Radio, I'm proud to say. Mm. And that feature is reaching people all over the country, and it's just bringing them a sense of hope and connectedness. And, wow, you mean there are some things I can do, and there's answers to the questions that we're asking. Yes, yes, yes. And all of that is just meaning that the kingdom is supported, families are supported, and the next generation has a better chance at being what God has designed the family to be.
Indeed. In fact, you even say in the book that you, through some of the training and teaching you've done, that there have been people who've said, man, I dodged a bullet, that they were ready to jump into a relationship, maybe without consideration of what the family mix would look like. In fact, you know, Ron, some folks are running headlong towards a new relationship because they're running away hard from an old past relationship. And what they may not realize is that there's a whole new set of problems waiting for them in this new relationship. So I wonder if you would, before we take a break, just speak to that person who may be moving too fast in a new relationship without reconciling some of the hurts from their past relationship.
Yeah, I guess I would encourage you to just slow down. And I there's just a lot of wisdom in that. Time is your friend, if you'll let it be your friend. Mm. In particular, if you've gone through a significant loss or a hurt, a betrayal, something like that, it's just a spouse passing away. That's a tremendous loss. And when you slow down, you give the Holy Spirit an opportunity to just bring some healing to your heart. And what that does is it puts you in a better place to make decisions about the future. And it gives you more objectivity about what your children need from you and the timing of what they need from you in terms of moving into a new relationship. There's just 100 different things, blessings that brings to you when you slow down. When you speed up, you run the risk of alienating your kids. You know, I've had 25-year-olds say to me, my dad is 60 and he's dating this woman and he's ready to get married, and he would have never let me date, you know, my girlfriends when I was 16 the way he's dating this woman. He's lost his mind, right? So this is a 25-year-old trying to get dad to kind of come back to reality. And that just happens. You know, we get love drunk and all rushing headlong into decisions that if we slow down, you might still make that same decision, but you're going to make it.
Yeah.
The child can receive it, not as well as you receive it.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. And, Ron, I think you just had call waiting on your phone, so I'm going to have Grace connect with you about that. We're taking a quick short break. But if you've got questions about navigating the step family, in fact, the title of his book is The Smart Step Family, now's the time to call. You can call anonymously if that's easier for you, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me your questions, Susie@myfaithradio.com. I'd also love your comments. What's been the hardest thing about blending your families? Susie@myfaithradio.com. Otherwise, call 877-93-FAITH. Don't go away. More with Ron Deal in a moment. glad you tuned in today. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, and we are talking to Ron Deal about the Smart Step Family, 7 steps to a healthy family. We're going to get to those 7 steps in just a moment. But first, we're going to just talk about maybe some red flags that are that you would maybe appear if you're flying headlong into a relationship, a second marriage, and things to maybe be watching out for. Do we have Ron on the line here? Is he with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. I know we had to reconnect there. So before the break, Ron, I was asking you about, you know, if someone's maybe running headlong into a relationship because they're running fast away from past hurts, and you were saying, you know, time can be your friend if you reconcile some of these pains and hurts. And it is amazing how you called it love drunk. I know it's also called happy dumb, where you get so happy that you don't have your wits about you anymore. But maybe what are some just cautionary red flags, things to pay attention to, even if your emotions are ready to swallow you alive?
Well, you know, when two people are dating, for example, you need to pay attention to two things when there's kids involved, right? Mm. You got to deal with your coupleness, right? So the male-female relationship, but you also have to deal with the whole familyness factors. So, for example, in coupleness, makes sense. People would understand you want to date somebody of high character. That would be a red flag if they have low character, right? Mm-hmm. If they've got a behavioral habit, for example, that is just not healthy, well, then continuing to attach yourself to that person, moving towards marriage, that doesn't make any sense. That's reasonable. People usually get that. What they often overlook are the familyness factors that are pretty significant, that are at least a yellow flashing light, and it could be a red light. You're the one who has to decide whether it's a stop sign or not. But one, for example, would be you're dating somebody and they have an extremely antagonistic relationship with an ex-spouse. Do you want to attach yourself to that? Mm. That person in the other household who is parenting your new spouse's kids half the time. You're marrying yourself to their parenting. In other words, their parenting is going to influence the kids, your stepkids, that move into your house. If you have kids of your own, then your stepkids are going to be influencing your biological kids, perhaps in ways that you never imagined, never dreamed, that you would have never allowed anybody to bring into your home and influence, that you would say, nope, that doesn't belong in our household, but yet the kids are going to live there, and so they're going to bring that into your household. That's the kind of thing that people have to really stop and think about. You may, and I've had people kind of jump on me, Susie, and go, wait a minute, you don't understand. This guy I'm dating is wonderful, he's godly, he's a great guy, I got it. I understand that. And Ron, what you're telling me is because his ex-wife is very difficult, you're saying I should be wary of dating. I'm just saying that's a yellow flashing light.
And because it'll have an impact that you're probably not prepared for, right?
Don't go into this naive thinking that, hey, it's not going to be a big deal. I'm marrying him, not her. No, you're marrying both of them.
Mm.
That's why I like to call her the ex-wife-in-law.
Because there's an impact in the relationship. And whether people want to hear that or not, that is just the reality that there will be a ripple effect. And you need to go in with your eyes open. I thought it was interesting, one of the stories you referenced in your book about a woman saying, well, this guy and I, if it weren't for the kids involved, we would be perfect. And you're like, but the kids are involved. So speak to that issue where maybe the kids are, a mess for whatever reason. But what do you say to that person going, if it weren't for them, he would be perfect for me? How do they navigate that?
It's a package deal. You have to go in with both eyes open and understand that when you marry a person, you marry everything that they bring with them. Now, that could be a mother-in-law and a father-in-law. We understand that. But it could also be an ex-wife-in-law. It could be children. It could be, whatever those hurts and betrayals are from the past. You're marrying all of that. And so I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying be very, very aware of what that is and what that means for you and what the ripples are going to be in your life. You can't just be so focused on the individual that you miss the entire package.
And that does happen when we focus on the emotions, maybe, of what we're feeling in this new start, because we all want the new start, right? To the point where you maybe minimize and marginalize things that could be glaring issues if you're not willing to look at them, right?
Surely we wouldn't minimize the realities of life just to get what we think we want. We don't do that, do we, Susie?
Maybe.
We don't do that in anything else in our life.
Exactly.
Well, maybe we do in career decisions and different choices and buying a bigger car, a more expensive house than we really need. You know, we tend to be kind of blind about some of our own decisions. We tend to see what we want to see and the result we're hoping to get, and then we minimize everything that comes along with it that might be problematic. That is human nature, and that's why we need to slow down and seek godly counsel and take time and talk to the Lord and trust the Spirit to show us and reveal, but we have to be open to what it is that he would show us. And when we do that, you just make better decisions.
Well, if you would, Ron, talk to, we've just probably got 2 minutes before our hard break at the bottom, but maybe talk to that person listening who got married, is in a step family situation, and maybe they had these expectations that things should come together quicker than they, you know, have, and they're really dealing with some of the wreckage of maybe forcing things to come together too quickly. What do you say?
Well, that's a discouraging place to be, and it really is, and we just have to acknowledge that. It's easy to get discouraged and rethink, and boy, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have done this. Wish I would have done that. And at some point, you know, those are all good to acknowledge, but then you have to say, okay, but what now? What am I going to do now? And my encouragement to anybody would be, you know, seek counsel, somebody outside yourself, especially if you're really feeling like you're in a rut. You know, we all have difficulties, but we can kind of move through them. But if it's not getting better, you need to seek some outside support, pastoral support, a therapist, a professional counselor, somebody who can just offer some perspective on not only for you, but for the two of you as a husband and wife, as a team, as a now what do we do and how do we move forward. Certainly, there's tons of resources. FamilyLifeBlended.com is completely designed for you. Books, materials, things you can put your hand on to help you gain some of those answers. What we often find is when people get a better perspective about what's going on and then therefore what they need to do to move forward, that it makes a world of difference for couples and stepfamilies, simply because you may have been thinking, well, life's supposed to go this way and this is how we're going to get it done. And then you discover, well, oh, wow, our end result looks more like this instead of that. It's a different kind of home, and we build it a little bit differently than you do a first family home. And when you just start going about constructing the home that you are, it's amazing how the simple little things make big differences for people. And your hope comes back, your energy comes back, the discouragement begins to fade away, and you're back on track.
Boy, that's such a great piece of wisdom, starting with constructing the family that you actually are and have, and not this picture of what you think it should be, especially comparing it to a first-time family, because just the reality is the dynamic is different, but there's still skills and there's wisdom for this different dynamic, isn't there?
What I love to say is the Brady Bunch lied, okay? Mm-hmm. What they taught everybody who's ever seen even one episode of that show is that stepfamilies look like and act like and feel like and talk like, and the rules and relationships and the roles of family members are exactly like first families, biological family units. And it's just not true.
Not true.
So comparing yourself to the wrong model will get you frustration. Comparing yourself to the right model will get you some answers.
Mm. More with Ron Deal in a moment. Don't go away. You know, sometimes you just have to get to that point where you feel like you've hit a wall, you can't do it anymore, and you say, here I am, move in me, God. Move in my heart and my circumstances in ways that only you can. That's the invitation. So glad you tuned in today. I'm Suzy Larson. This is Live the Promise. Are you living the promise? Is there a promise you're standing on today? Be because God is for you. Talking to Ron Deal today specifically about navigating those step-family relationships. And you outlined 7 steps to a healthy family in your book, The Smart Step-Family, Ron. And if we can, I want to get through as many of these as possible. But the first one is discover a redemptive God who loves, forgives, and provides strength and direction for the journey. And under that point, you said that sometimes the problems and heartaches associated with step-families can actually sometimes be a distraction to what's really important. So unpack that for us, if you would.
Yeah, well, Satan's always trying to pull down our relationships, because if he can get those, then he gets us. He gets our discouragement. He gets us defeated, and then, you know, we don't know what to do with ourselves. And like we talked about earlier, sometimes we get marginalized from other Christians in the church that can be a support to us. And so it just tears at our soul, right? So anytime, oh, by the way, he gets the next generation too, right? He gets our kids. And so anytime family is done well, and I don't care what kind of family, first family, single-parent family, step-family, anytime it's done well, it's a redemptive organism. It passes faith to the next generation. It fosters, it incubates faith within the home. It helps to mature the adults and the children to be more like Christ. And so ultimately, you know, that's what family ministry is about, is helping us get to that place where our family is a place of faith and faith development. And trusting in a redemptive God, I think, sometimes is challenging for people in step families, especially if you've made some choices in your life that brought great consequence to yourself or others. Maybe choices that were considered sinful. Maybe choices that cost you dearly in terms of your relationship with people at church. And so how do you come back from that? And I'm just always reminded of two things when I look at Scripture. All the Old Testament family, or most of the Old Testament families, had a great complexity to them. You know, whether they're exactly like modern-day step-families, they're pretty close. And the other thing we see is the woman at the well, right? Jesus encountering the woman who had a pretty sordid and difficult relationship history, and yet he uses her. He talks to her. He's got living water for her. He turns her into an evangelist. Mm. She goes and tells other people to come and meet the one who told me everything I ever did, and somehow it's okay. That's the Christ that we'd love for you to step up and meet. He's more than happy to take you where you are to where he wants you to be.
Yeah, and he can do that. And the next one you talked about is adjust your expectations and learn how to cook a step family. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to explain what you mean, because you don't actually like the term blended family so much. Talk about that.
Well, you know, we use it a lot, and it's a term that people use. It's just not very practical in terms of how you actually bring together the members of your family. You know, if we think in cooking strategies or cooking terminology, really what a step family, what a blended family is doing is trying to take a bunch of people, ingredients, if you will, who have been all tossed into the same bowl together, and you're trying to figure out how to become a family to one another. It starts with the couple. They fall in love, and they become husband and wife, but everybody else now has to kind of figure out, what does that mean for us? I got a step sibling, I got a stepdad, I got a step grandfather, but I also have a grandfather. And so what does that mean? How do I relate to these people, and under what circumstances? And so figuring that out really is the hard work of being a step family. So I like to talk about it as a cooking strategy. If you use a blender, you just slam all the ingredients together. That's what blenders do. In real life, that makes people really irritated and annoyed with one another. It just adds conflict. If you slam together, for example, hey, I'm not your dad, but you're going to call me dad, that's a classic illustration of a blendering mentality. I'm not your dad, but you're going to call me dad. So we're slamming this thing together, and you're going to feel about me the way I want you to feel about me. Well, that's just really hard on kids, and it doesn't go over very well. Every once in a while, that'll work. But 99% of the time, it doesn't. It backfires. So we talk about crockpotting, you know, your family. Mm-hmm. And that's much different. Notice crockpots are slow. It works over time. It takes low heat, not high heat. Low heat means you're going to be intentional. You're going to do things that are helpful to build a relationship. But you're not going to slam ingredients together and force it. You're going to let it happen on its own time. Now that, you want to talk about trust. We just went all the way back to trust. Trust in the Lord in the meantime while you don't really like me. Well, that's really hard to do. But that's exactly what you kind of have to endure on your way to figuring out how to like one another. And then when we discover that, it's more genuine. And that really helps step families.
Well, you sure can see where you need a strong walk with the Lord, because I would think that the temptation in a stepfamily situation would be to take so many things personal, even things that if it was in a first family, if it were in a first family context, maybe you wouldn't be so apt to take them personal. But I would imagine the sensitivities are heightened quite a bit, aren't they?
They're very heightened, and it's easy to take things personally. So, excellent. Let's do a contrast. You know, in a biological family, mom and dad raising their kids, if, 8-year-old Johnny hops up in mom's lap and they're watching a TV show at night, is dad intimidated or threatened by that? No, probably not. In fact, he's just thrilled to death that Johnny feels safe and comfortable in mom's arms, and they're having a nice moment there, and it's pretty cool to him, right? But you take that stepdad situation, and he can't sit by his wife because Johnny's always in the way. Now, all of a sudden, 8-year-old Johnny is a bit of a threat to me. And not that I hate Johnny or anything like that. I think he's a great kid, but I just want to sit by my wife, you know. And so all of a sudden, the relationships are competing rather than moving together in the same general direction. And that is a huge difference between stepfamilies and biological families that really blindsides a lot of people. So part of this trust and crockpotting mentality is understanding that that's an appropriate thing for Johnny to do a little bit. And every once in a while, mom needs to say, not this time. I'm going to let him sit by me. So there's little movements that you make that are moving the family closer together. You have to just deal with that threat in a very real way and figure out how to then come together around it.
Mm. Well, that segues well into this next step. Ron, you say that your marriage must be top priority. In fact, you say that without a strong marriage, the family falls apart. And that would go, you know, for any family, first or second time family. But I want to talk to you about, with regards to keeping marriage top priority, the temptation is it most often to put the kids first? And with that in mind, how do you navigate that? Because you think the kids are probably already feeling like casualties. So I know this isn't easy and you can put a nice bow on it, that this is really complicated. So kind of unpack that for us, keeping marriage priority, but paying attention to what's happening with the kids.
Yeah, I'll put it a little bit differently. I don't think that it's that biological parents put their kids first. I think they're just very familiar, and they have a strong bond connectedness. They have an attachment that goes all the way to DNA. This is your kid, for crying out loud. And as far as the child's concerned, they've lost a lot of things, a lot of changes in their family, and they want to hold on to mom, okay? Let's mm-hmm. just say it's a biological mom. And so it's just very familiar for them to hold on, sit down on the couch together, watch TV, as I just said, just be together, make decisions together, because they did that together before he showed up. And so that familiarity sometimes then just gets in the way of her finding room for him to be her partner. She's making that happen, and yet on some level it's just easier to make the quick decision, talk to her child, and be done with it. But then he's saying, wait a minute, I feel left out. I don't feel like I'm important. Do I have a say here? So it feels to him like he's not a priority. That's where that goes. It goes to the place where you feel unimportant. And now I'm competing, back to the competition again, I'm competing with your relationship with your kids. It's always true that somebody loses a little bit when a new person comes into a parent's life. The kids feel displaced on some level, maybe not significantly, but it's true. They don't have access to mom like they used to. And she's sharing her heart with him. And so, and by the way, if stepdad brought kids, she's sharing her heart with him and his kids. So his kids get time, my step-siblings get time that I don't get, that I used to get. So I'm jealous of them. You can just see how there's so many different layers to it, in particular for children. And so you mentioned the word casualties. They can feel like they're casualties, and they can take it personally, and then they can get upset. And what happens when they complain? Well, mom, I used to sit in your lap all the time. How come he's getting to sit beside you sometimes? And then mom feels guilty. And now we're tapping into something that's really hard. Mom feels guilty. You know, her kids have already been through enough. They've been through a lot. She didn't want them to experience any more pain, no more heartache, and certainly not rejection. And so there's that temptation to give in, give them what they want. That, in effect, does put the kids first, right? That's where things really get off. Let me say it this way. If you're going to have a crock pot, you might want to plug it in if it's going to actually cook anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what a marriage is in a stepfamily. Mm-hmm. It's the electricity. It's the power. It brings heat to the crock pot. The ingredients begin to warm up and soften But if you have a poor marriage, you unplug the crock pot. There's no heat. There's no motivation to get along. Things aren't going to get better. They're just going to gradually get worse. So the marriage is really, really important.
Wow. You know, I'm thinking, Ron, that if you just reduce your life to reacting to the squeaky wheel, getting the grease, so to speak, you're doomed for failure because it's almost like your steering wheel veers left or something. But when you think about the intentionality it takes in a first marriage for marriage to work and for it to thrive, I would imagine once again, it would take almost twice the intentionality to say, okay, I know you're the squeaky wheel right now and you're asking for a lot, but I have to keep the main things the main things. I mean, to keep your head about you and keep the main things and keep marriage a priority, keep a walk with the Lord a priority, and not give in to every whim of the child, but to pay attention when their souls are kind of crying out. I mean, you have to be game on, it would seem, to work all that out.
Yes. I tell couples all the time, if you're going to make a mistake, error on the side of protecting your marriage. Go over time to have conversations. Just check in with each other. Hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is the way I want to handle that. Are you still good with that? Because if you don't come out on this thing together on the same page as a husband and wife, then it all begins to kind of crumble in lots of different directions. There's already going to be some stress. Kids are already going to feel displaced. You're already going to have things you got to deal with. But if you're not together, that just makes it triple hard. Right. And so, yes, lots of communication, lots of cooperation. And by the way, there's something step parents can do that really helps or hurts here. I mean, if a stepdad in our little scenario is constantly, you know, criticizing his wife and you never put me first and you're always putting the kids first and how come I'm always the second thought and blah, 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 then it just forces everything into an issue. But if he understands how difficult this is for her and has some compassion for that, and recognizes that, you know, her kid does need a little loving time, a little TLC sitting on the couch with mom at the end of the day, that that's a legitimate thing. And so he steps back and makes room for that. Then he's ministering to the child, but he's also doing his marriage a favor. So everybody has their part. Everybody has their role. But you got to understand the dynamics so that you can view it the same.
And the great news is that there is a way to do this in a way where these relationships end up strong and the family ends up happy. And so it's overwhelming, but I think what's so important here is that these are pitfalls that you can avoid and just skills you can learn. Talking to Ron Deal about the Smart Step Family, when we come back, we'll address the ghost of marriage past and even some things that kids of divorced parents wish their parents would know. We'll talk about that on the other side. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Ron Deal today about navigating those step family relationships. And one thing you mentioned in the book, The Smart Step Family, was the ghost of marriage past. Talk about that and its impact on a current step family relationship.
I love Mark Twain's quote. He said, "A cat that sits on a hot stove won't sit on a hot stove again." Okay. And then he added, "Of course, neither will it sit on a cold stove." You know, anytime you get burned, you just know not to go back there. You're more guarded, you're more cautious, and you put up protective measures, okay? And in life, we all do that in relationships. You get burned a couple of times. You learn how to put up walls. You learn how to be careful so you don't get hurt again. So trusting a new spouse after you've had a previous, maybe a spouse had an affair, walked out, left you, now you're in another relationship and you love this person deeply, and yet trusting them with all your heart is really, really difficult. That's the ghost of marriage past. It kind of sits on your shoulder and it whispers little things to you and it says, now be careful. You know, don't give him this. Don't trust him with that. Don't let her know this. Hold on to that piece of information or that bank account or, you know, and so you're thinking twice rather than just giving and being fully involved with that individual. You're doing risk management. And there's really no way to have deep intimacy in a relationship if you're doing risk management all the time. It just short circuits the process. So you have to bust your ghost. You got to figure out how to love as deeply as Christ would have you to love. And that's just really hard sometimes.
Wow. Love as deeply as Christ would have you love. Those are such good words. I'm thinking, Ron, as you said towards the beginning of the show, about the importance of reconciling your past hurts when you're coming out of a broken marriage, broken family. To take time to process, to counsel through it. And that seems extremely important. But I would also imagine that some of these things, this ghost of marriage past, some of these things, you almost might want to counsel through it, because some things you're not even going to be aware of until they come up in the context of marriage, right? Where you're starting to see something that looks reminiscent of your old marriage and you're automatically jumping to conclusions, this is going to end up there. And wouldn't it be wise maybe to have a counselor or some kind of godly sounding board to sort through when you want to have an overreaction to a smaller thing?
You're exactly right, Susie. I think one of the biggest misnomers that we have is, you know, somebody goes through a divorce and we ask them, well, have you healed from that? Well, yes, I think I have. I worked on it. I went to divorce care. I spent some week. I went to divorce care twice. And, you know, I'm feeling like I'm in such a better place. And you are. But you don't know the deeper layers to the recovery process until you're forced to deal with them in a new way. And so I tell couples all the time, it's only when you get into another relationship where you're having to trust deeply another person who potentially can hurt you, that's when you will know what's still left to work on. Mm. And oftentimes people don't recognize that until they're married and they are 3 years in, and boy, we've had a lot of conflicts around this and around that. And we're now figuring out that a lot of those conflicts really have to do with trust and my inability to really let you in. And now I've got to figure out how to deal with me. And see, that's always where it starts, Susie.
Yeah.
We want the other person to change and love us so perfectly that we won't be fearful of being hurt. It doesn't work that way.
Oh, such good advice.
I have to deal with my fear. I have to deal with what's going on in me so that then it doesn't become a barrier to our relationship. I like to say it this way. If I'm protecting me from you, there can't be an us. So I've got to deal with me. And yes, going to a counselor, sitting down with somebody who can help you think through that. And by the way, my advice would be that you go as a couple to a counselor. Even if one of you is kind of wrestling through this ghost thing, the other person needs to be aware of how they can help and be supportive and love you and understand that and know what the triggers are, so they can avoid them. It's really a couple journey, not just for an individual.
If I'm protecting me from you, then there can't be an us. And this goes back again to the issue of control, Ron, because if you're doing things that are triggering fears in me, the answer isn't that I control you so that you don't trigger me. The idea is I've got big triggers, and God can redeem those things and heal those things to the point where you can go years from now and go, that used to be one of my buttons, and it barely got a response from me. And to me, that is such an encouraging redemption when you notice that, you know? And go ahead.
Excellent point. And yeah, first thing I tell people is, all right, we're going to write down these triggers as we come across them. And I want you constantly praying, God, just help me to recognize this in me, to catch it. Help me to slow down my reactions and to begin to respond, you know, through the Spirit rather than through the flesh.
Now, we just have probably about, 4 or 5 minutes before I ask you to pray. And I want to talk about the whole co-parenting issue, because that is a big deal from what I understand with step families. We've had Tammy Daughtry on the show a few times before, and I love that you reference the top 10 things kids wish they could say to their parents, written by her. And if I could share a few of these and have you comment on them, that would be great. And one of them she says is, don't say mean things about my other parent. I want and need to love you both. And how often this happens, Ron, where the child is really put in a position to almost have to choose sides, and they become this bargaining chip that's so painful for them. Talk about that.
Well, when an adult says something negative about the other parent, what they think they're doing is, you know, maybe putting the other parent down or just letting their sarcasm kind of slip out. But what they don't realize they're doing, what's really insidious about this, is how it asks the child to make a choice between the parents. Notice how in Tammy, she words it so well. Notice what the child is saying. I want to love you both. To the child, it feels like you're saying, that I can love you, but I can't love them. That your critical negative comment about dad in the other home, this coming from mom, is telling me that I really should be loyal to you and love you, and I really should not be loyal and love dad. That's the insidious nature of those criticisms. And I'm just convinced most parents don't realize that that's what they're imposing on their child. But they got to understand that. That hurts a kid to their core. If anything, anybody can mess up one or two times or whatever. But if that's a repetitive pattern of negativity that one parent has about the other parent, all you're doing is turning your kids against you.
And it's with a cost. Here's another one. Don't make me pick who I want to spend time with. It's not fair, and I'll get hurt if you do that. And don't keep track of my time like I'm on the clock. It can't always be 100% fair. Please just love me when we're together, and don't make me feel bad about not spending the same amount of time with each of you. Here again, this is a kid we're talking about, and you sure can see how this could impact even their future relationship with their parents.
Yeah, they don't want to choose. And again, it's another example of that. What they want to do is to be free to love everybody who loves them. That's really what they need, is your permission. And that's the antidote to this sort of stuff is, hey, enjoy your dad this weekend. Hope you have a good time. Hey, I heard you guys went fishing. How'd that go? Oh, man, that's awesome. When you celebrate those stories that are connected to the other parent and the child's time with the other parent, you're giving them permission to like and love and enjoy the people in their life. And that is very liberating and free.
And it almost normalizes as much as possible still the family unit, because that ex is still connected to you through that child. And so to say, how'd the fishing trip go? I mean, and one of them was laugh and smile. I want to enjoy my life, and your mood impacts my mood. Find a way to be happy and enjoy your life. You know, and I've heard stories, Ron, of parents who've divorced who got older and noticed how the one parent maybe took the hit and wouldn't criticize, wouldn't be that person. They maybe went through a time of being misunderstood, but they came out the hero because they were the grown-up. And so in due time, I mean, that does present itself. If you're that person who's being gracious and loving, in due time, that will surface, won't it?
Absolutely. Grace is like a magnet. Mm. It just pulls us back toward it, and we may wander away from it for a while. Sometimes kids do that. Sometimes they get fooled by the games that their parents are playing. But eventually, they grow up, they see through it, and more often than not all the time. I wish it was all the time, but more often than not, they're drawn back to that grace-filled parent.
Mm. What a call. And this is such an important ministry, Ron, and I'm so grateful that you've rolled up your sleeves and decided to minister to this group, because we've missed it as a church. Maybe next time you come back, we can talk about creative ways that the church can get our arms around blended families, step families who are trying. They need the community of God. And so wondering if you'd pray for that person listening who's really in the thick of it with the step family relationships.
Sure will. God in heaven, I know you care deeply about our life and our relationships, our families. You are invested in our family life. And when we struggle, you hurt, and you want better for us and more for us. As somebody's listening today, and if they're kind of wrestling with some things in their life, no matter what it is, I just pray that they will feel your loving arms around them, that they will hear the echo of your words, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you, and to know that you are with them and that you care deeply about what matters to them. Guide them. Show them through people or circumstances or your word or whatever mechanism you choose, God. Guide them so that they can see there's hope, and let them follow you and trust you with all their heart. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
Mm. Ron, it's always an honor to talk with you. And again, thank you for the great work you're doing for the kingdom and for step families. Bless you, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. Title of his book, again, is The Smart Step Family, 7 Steps to a Healthy Family. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Take some time and check out some of the other podcasts. We've got some great shows, and you can be a radio missionary and share them with a friend. By click of a button, you can send them out by Facebook, email, or Twitter. Well, I'll leave you with this thought. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a blessed day.